What we see here is that there's no effect of body mass on the flight performance in foragers, and there's a significant effect on body mass on the flight performance of nurses. Again, only explaining about 17-18% in the variation. However, because these are all independent observations, we can compare this entire group, and we see that body mass predicts for flight performance quite significantly, explaining about 66% of the variation amongst the group. So what we see here is that, again, if we look at bees in general, body mass is a very, very strong predictor, and that would lead you to believe that the increase in flight performance that accompanies the transition from nursing to foraging, again, relies also on the decrease in body mass during that same transition. That isn't the case. Now, when we take a look at the flight kinematics, remember before, a bee's ability to fly in both air and hypodense gas is dependent upon how fast the bee can beat its wings. And that depends on both the frequency in which the bee is beating the wings as well as the absolute amplitude the bee is beating its wings. And so when we take a look at most hymenopterans, right, honeybees in general beat their wings at around 225, 230 hertz, around 90 degrees in amplitude. And when they fly in an aerodynamic challenge environment such as hypodense heliox, right, they simply increase their amplitude and they keep wing beat frequency the same. And this has been shown in both honeybees, carpenter bees, as well as orchid bees. Right? And in fact, when looking at normal age foragers, again, their wing beat frequency and wing stroke amplitude is what we'd expect. And they increase their stroke amplitude with a non-significant change in their wing beat frequency. However, when we look at the flight kinematics of nurses, nurses' wing stroke amplitudes are around 120 degrees when hovering in air, right? And a wing beat frequency of about 220 hertz. Again, this is because nurses are much heavier. They are flying closer to their aerodynamic limits when they're in air. And when they fly in their least dense gas in that hypodense atmosphere, they marginally increase their stroke amplitude, but they also decrease their frequency. Nurses are unable to maintain stroke frequency, unlike typical foragers. Now, what's also interesting is when we look at that group of precocious foragers are intermediate to the nurses and the typical foragers when hovering in air, but like the nurses, they also decrease their wing beat frequency, right, when flying in a hypodense gas. They still increase their stroke amplitude, leading to an absolute increase in the wing speed required to accommodate heliox gas, but they are unable to maintain their wing beat frequency. Now, I can probably talk about a number of biomechanical mechanisms that contribute to this for a great length, possibly boring you guys to death and leading to conference collapse disorder. All right? But the take-home message here is that the transition to flight-intensive behaviors is accompanied by a large increase in flight performance. The general trend is that foragers are lighter. Nurses decrease body mass. They shed a fair amount of water weight, allowing them to carry less mass when they're flying in normal air, all right, allowing them to fly at lower density gases, having greater flight performance, and again, possibly allowing them greater payload for foraging both nectar, pollen, and water. However, foragers are able to maintain their wing beat frequency. So there's something about the maturation and the kinematics across age and development that allow foragers to maintain wing beat frequency while nurses and precocious foragers do not. And so I'd like to thank some funding agencies that have helped for this project, NASA and Nevada EPSCoR who have funded me the last 2 years, NSF and NIH, as well as Sable Systems providing us equipment to continue this research. And with that, I'll take any questions. It's been studied to some extent in terms of the valence and the size of the molecules that are being replaced with nitrogen. In general, helium hasn't been shown to have any effect on the neurology and the physiology of honeybees. They're still receiving a normoxic environment, 21% oxygen. So it's simply just replacing the nitrogen and making it less tense. Okay.
Very Well, first I would like to, of course, thank the organizer for making it possible for me to talk to you today. On the slide, you see the three driving forces behind the IEPV work in my lab: Eyal Mauri, Edna Tana, and Rita Mozesko. I will address four different topics, or four different issues. The first of is the most important to me. I am not a bee person. I am a molecular biologist and a virologist. And the major interest of my lab now is RNA recombination, a host viral RNA recombination. And as it turned out, we think it is associated with CCD. So I'll give a little bit of information about this RNA recombination things. Then I'll just point out what have been already pointed out by others, which is the differences between IAPV and KBV. Then I'll give some new information about Varroa and IAPV. And then I'll try to convey to you our current working hypothesis of how CCD is developing. This would be a hypothetical part of the talk. Okay, RNA recombination in IPV. Since 205 already, we've published a paper that shows that segments of RNA viral, non-retro RNA viruses, can be integrated into the host genome. Right now we know that at least this is true for 5 or 6 different RNA viruses. But at that time, we wondered whether we have just a single case, an accidental case. So we started to look around for other viruses. And since we had a program on IAPV, we chose IAPV as well into the sample. And we found out that, yes, segments of the viral RNA are being reverse transcribed and integrated into the genome of the bee. And here are two papers, only the two papers that are regarding IAPV. There are more that regarding other viruses. And then the recombined RNA may reverse transcribes and integrated into the host genome. And a virus may transmit the chimeric RNA horizontally. And such recombinations occur frequently. We know that now, just for a few months now, working with the plant virus, that the frequency of this is quite high. Now, this cartoon is summarizing our work on RNA recombination. And what you see is a cell, the blue thing is the nucleus, and of course the DNA inside the nucleus. And of course there is transcription, and the messenger RNA goes out into the cytoplasm. And then a virus comes in, and the RNA, the viral RNA, is being released and enters the cell. And now, in certain cases, and due to, so far, as we know, due to hot spots on the sequences, on both sequences of the RNA and the viral RNA, some recombination takes place. I don't know the frequency of this. But there are chimeric RNAs being made from cellular RNA and viral RNA. And there are different types of chimeric RNAs. And this is not only summarizing IAPV. This is what we know from a series of viruses. And one of these may be reverse transcribed, go back to the nucleus, and integrate into very slowly into the host genome. In this case, the bee. And these ones are then maybe integrated into the intergenic region of the genome, and that means that they are going to be deteriorated with every cell division. And if you are not looking for very short sequences in a few generations, you don't find it. But some are going into stable regions of the genome, and at least one of them, we know for sure, is being transcribed as a chimeric RNA. And this RNA goes into the cytoplasm, And at the same time, the virus replicates and make a chimeric protein. And then at the same time, the virus replicates and make its own RNA progeny. And if this chimeric RNA here carries signals of assembly, it may encapsulate it with the viral genome into the virus, into the progeny virus. So you see there is some proportion of these goes into this, some proportion of these goes into this, and some proportion of these goes into this. So it's going to be lower and lower and lower at every step. And then this virus now may move the new trait into another cell. And not only to another cell, if this virus is affecting two different organisms, it will move the new trait from organism to organism. And in one of the papers, we have shown clearly that there is a reciprocal exchange of sequences between the virus and the host. Not only that we found viral sequences in the host genome, we found host sequences in the viral genome. Again, at a certain proportion of the viral genome, a certain proportion of host cells. Now I am coming to the IAPV and KBV, and you can see the phylogenetic picture of the sister viruses, and you can see that they cluster together. IAPV, KBV, and ABBV are clustering together, and that the KBV and IAPV are closer to each other than the other ones. And if we now compare the sequences, and I'll do it quickly because Diana already mentioned a lot of that. The complete genome is about 74% homology, and the non-structural and the structural or